Good morning, folks. We're going to start the House Education Finance Committee. And today we have the Department of Minnesota Department of Education in to speak. But first off, we will hit the minutes. Representative Clardy, have you a chance to review the minutes?
I have, and I'd like to move them.
Representative Clardy moves the minutes for January 25th. Any questions from folks on the minutes? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
All those opposed, no. The minutes are adopted for January 25th. With that, members, as I said before, we have the Minnesota Department of Education commissioner in today to go over the governor's budget and do a presentation. And what we're going to do is we're going to have them go through the whole presentation. The slides are in your packets. They're also posted online. And jot down your questions. We're probably going to hold them to the end, unless there's something just like pertinent and burning that you have to ask that person. But I've already confirmed they're all going to stay until the presentation's done. So I'd like to hold questions until the end. With that, I'd like to welcome Commissioner Willie Jett to the table, and please state your name for the record and proceed.
Good morning, Madam Chair, committee members. My name is Willie Jett, and I'm the Commissioner of Education. I'd like to first say good morning to everyone, and I'd like to thank you for this invitation to come before all of you again, and this time with exciting information about the Governor and Lieutenant Governor's 2023 education budget. Next slide, please. I know that each and every one of you around this table, in the audience, and yes, even watching at home, is dedicated to the best outcomes for our students. And to provide the resources and supports to help achieve these outcomes, we must have a roadmap with strong guiding principles. Next slide. This set of principles is a strong commitment to the Governor and Lieutenant Governor's Due North Education Plan, which is centered on ensuring every child in Minnesota receives a high-quality education, no matter their race or zip code. We're proud to put forth this budget of close to $7 billion for students, families, communities, and the entire state of Minnesota. This budget makes investments to ensure every child receives a world-class education, like investing in early learning opportunities and rigorous coursework. Every student learns in a safe and nurturing environment, such as funding for alternatives to exclusionary discipline. Every student learns in a classroom with caring and qualified teachers, by investing in various teacher workforce initiatives, expanding access to opportunities for students of color and indigenous students through funding for the EDI Center, expanded access to opportunities for students in greater Minnesota, like career and technical education funding and facilities funding and equalization, and funding a 21st century education like significant reductions in the special education and English learner cross subsidies. While this budget may seem like there's a lot, and I know you've all seen MMB's budget books, I want us to be mindful of a few things. To fully support the full child on a three-dimensional axis, we must look at the needs of all children. This cannot be a simple budgetary solution. We must look at investing in a whole ecosystem of supports that can be tailored and agile for the needs of each and every student. Each student needs a game plan. And within the Governor and Lieutenant Governor's Due North Education Plan, executed by this 2023 education budget, every student can have that. Not only are we going to tell you what the strategies in this game plan are and how much they cost, but we are going to tell you why they matter. Next slide, please. Minnesota schools absolutely must have a solid base of sustainable funding in order to provide the teaching and learning programming an environment that our students and educators need and deserve. Our students need academic supports to achieve all that they are capable of, reading at grade level, learning math to be the engineers of tomorrow, and having social-emotional skills to be world-class citizens. Our littlest learners need access to the high-quality early education opportunities to get them off to a strong start. Schools must provide programming to students and families so that our schools are the community hubs that they should be. Students also need staff and programming to support their mental and behavioral health and physical needs and safety. We need every child to feel heard and seen in their schools with inclusive, culturally relevant, and equitable teaching and learning environments. To get our students on the path to college and career readiness, we must challenge them with more rigorous and innovative opportunities. We must never lose sight of the fact that a well-supported educator workforce is fundamental and critical to the survival of our schools and the well-being and academic success of our students. And finally, this ecosystem of supports for our student needs an MDE that has capacity to provide guidance, technical assistance, professional development, and administration that schools and educators need and deserve to ultimately provide the best educational experience to our students and families. So again, I'd like to thank you for the opportunity to present this education budget to you. And with me today, I have Kathy Erickson, Bobby Burnham, Darren Cordy, Stephanie Graff, and Denise Anderson to walk through our proposals and help to answer any questions. And with that, I will hand it off to Kathy.
Thank you, Commissioner. And members, I wanted to also remind you that you were also part of the packets and posted was the full governor's budget that you have too. It was just a little emailed. It was a little bit big to want us to print for everyone, even though I have printed my own copy to look at. So with that, Catherine Erickson, Director of School Finance, please state your name for the record and proceed.
Good morning. Thank you. Thank you, Chair Yukim. My name is Kathy Erickson. I'm the Director of School Finance at the Minnesota Department of Education. Good morning, and I will be talking some highlights related to some of our 21st education funding. The first one we want to talk about is the general education basic formula increase, which includes a tie to inflation as well as a 4% in fiscal year 25 and a 2% in fiscal year 26. This would include $716 million in the first biennium and an additional $1.4 billion in fiscal years 26 and 27. The basic formula would be tied to the consumer price index, and we currently recommend a cap at 3%. And in addition, the basic formula allowances at 4% would equal approximately $275 per student in fiscal year 25. And an additional $175 in fiscal year 26. The next item is our special education cross-subsidy. The governor is recommending that we increase the special education cross-subsidy to equal a 50% increase to close the gap on the current cross-subsidy. This is a dedicated state aid because our current expenditures are higher than what we have for committed revenues related to special education. This would redirect dollars back to the undesignated unreserved budgets in our school districts and would allow the cross-subsidy reduction aid to increase to all schools. We also, the governor is recommending the universal meals program, which would include breakfast, lunch, and a community eligibility provision. This funding would include $388.4 million in fiscal years 23 through 25 and an additional $424 million in fiscal years 26 and 27. This would allow for one breakfast and one lunch for every student enrolled in public schools, and also would be participating in the district would be participating in the federal lunch program. Certain requirements for partnership in the CEP or community eligibility program would be required in order to get state reimbursement, and there would be some immediate administration costs to have the program up and running. The governor also recommends investment into the English learner cross-subsidy reduction of approximately 20%. Our state funding has not kept up with the cost and needs for our bilingual learners or students who do not have English as their first language. This would include an increase of funding of $24.9 million in fiscal years 24 and 25 and an additional $32.5 million in fiscal years 26 and 27. The components of this would be that we would just increase the EL revenue allowance. We would also extend the cap for the EL concentration formula. That's a component of our EL revenue, and would also allow for certain districts to adjust for inflation on the EL revenue and concentration. We are also looking, and the governor is recommending, some decreasing funding gaps within our facilities funding. This would allow for closing some disparities for districts formulating related to rural school districts. This would be an increase of $66.3 million in fiscal years 24 and 25, an additional $79.8 million in fiscal years 26 and 27. The intention would be for school districts to receive a yearly allocation to be used in conjunction with their long-term facilities maintenance rules and regulations of funding that they already receive. And there would also be an extension of additional authority for certain projects that would qualify, similar to the current health and safety projects over 100,000. The governor also recommends an unemployment insurance aid, which would be in correlation with a recommendation from DEED to increase opportunities for the school year hourly employees to be eligible for unemployment. This aid would be sent to school districts as a reimbursement for their eligible costs that would be a result of the new DEED legislation. This would be $200,000 in fiscal year 25 for administration and setup costs, and an additional $161.93 million in fiscal years 26 and beyond. This would just be to, again, for public school, public districts and charter schools, for reimbursement of eligible unemployment costs based on those new factors that would be coming into the district because of the new in-between periods allocations, should those be successful. And finally, we do have a few other items, including requesting an additional review and comment program for the capital projects that qualify through the achievement and integration. This would keep us in consistency with all of our other capital projects that must fall under a review and comment process. The governor also recommends the district renewal of current voter-approved operating referendums for one time following the initial approval of an operating referendum. There would be an eligibility to renew at one additional time after the successful referendum. And then also the governor is recommending compensatory spending at the generating sites at 80%, which would fall in alignment with any other conversations related to compensatory revenue.
Madam Chair, I'd like to go into the next section of our presentation.
Thank you. Go ahead, state your name for the record and proceed.
Thank you. My name is Bobby Burnham, and I oversee the Office of Teaching and Learning at the Department of Education. Madam Chair, committee members, thank you for having us today. I will be covering several proposals included in the governor's budget around academic excellence. The first proposal I will be covering is our bold plan for literacy achievement, a birth through grade 12 plan for literacy achievement. I think we all know that Minnesota must address the achievement gap in this area and the lack of progress in reading proficiency by prioritizing policies and practices based on the science of reading and delivered through a multi-tiered systems of support framework. The funding amount is $70 million per biennium, and that will provide services to schools that include a regional literacy network that we will develop in partnership with the Minnesota Service Cooperatives. We will have literacy directors in each of the co-ops, as well as a team of qualified trained literacy coaches to support schools in their areas to implement the bold literacy plan. This budget also includes statewide training based on the science of reading to be free for districts and charter schools. We will provide a menu of approved training options, and one of those will be free of cost. We will be partnering with institutions of higher ed throughout the state to create literacy labs. In these literacy labs will be opportunities for teacher candidates to not only have a practicum experience in instructional practices based on the science of reading, but it will also provide students who are struggling in the area of literacy to receive tutoring via these literacy labs. We also are proposing to upgrade our IT infrastructure and allow us to collect better data and provide support to districts through our data literacy work, and not only support districts, but really allow the department to collect and analyze the important data that we want districts to collect. We will be providing a menu of screening and universal screening tools for schools to implement based on the science of reading, and we hope to collect and support districts in the analysis of that data to ensure that students who are struggling receive the interventions as quickly as possible. We also have community and organizational partnerships included in this proposal. Those include money for public libraries and school libraries to build librarians' capacity and knowledge around the science of reading. And we also are continuing our partnership with the Parent Child Plus program. This is a home visiting program that really serves at-risk children and families in the area of literacy. And we also will continue our partnership with CARI, the Center for Applied Research and Educational Improvement at the University of Minnesota. They have been key partners in the development of our MTSS framework, as well as supporting our bold literacy work. Our next proposal complements our bold literacy proposal. It is a proposal to support our Minnesota multi-tiered systems of support and collaborative Minnesota partnerships to advance student success, our COMPASS model. This support is needed for the implementation of our Minnesota multi-tiered systems of support framework to meet the diverse needs of all of our students through evidence-based core instruction, as well as interventions that will really have an impact on student outcomes. The funding for this proposal is 40.5 per biennium. And the components of this proposal include a continuation of our MTSS grants to school districts to support them with the intentional work of implementing a multi-tiered systems of support to ensure that core and interventions are having the impact that they need to and that students get the services they need when they need it. We also will support, again, it's similar to the BOLD proposal, in our partnership with the Minnesota Co-ops, we will develop a math network to support the instruction of mathematics, as well as support the implementation of our new mathematics standards when that year comes due. We will also be granting to community partners to enhance the regional capacity of our MTSS implementation and evaluation of COMPASS. The next slide involves our early childhood proposal around a targeted mixed delivery early learning model. The why behind this is certainly to increase accessibility to early care and education opportunities through high-quality program delivered through early care, Head Start, and schools while honoring parent choice. We have looked at interactions between programs administered through Department of Ed and programs administered through Department of Human Services, and know that we can build a mixed delivery system that meets the needs of children, families, and communities. These programs are, or the mixed delivery system is a recommendation from the Great Start Task Force to align programming to create a more unified structure, at least for the four-year-olds, both in terms of standards and requirements, but also in the provision of funding to build, again, a stronger IT infrastructure, and to really align with a one-stop shop front door being used in communities to ease the navigation for families who are trying to navigate multiple services, in from DHS along with our services from MDE. So we really feel this mixed delivery model will be integration of supporting families in that area. Our next early learning proposal is early learning scholarships. We are expanding the dollar amount in scholarships as well as prioritizing ages birth through three. The resources must be provided for families to equitably access high-quality early care and education settings that meet their needs really beginning at birth. So this is a $180 million investment per biennium, and it will expand eligibility to children from birth to five with a prioritizing birth to age three. We wanted to maintain that family choice of if you have a four-year-old that you don't want to send to a mixed delivery program, they still have the option of receiving a scholarship. We hope to serve an additional 8,500 children, primarily infants and toddlers, at the current $10,000 cap. This will mean a reallocation of Pathway 2 dollars to the targeted mixed delivery program, which will simplify the funding structure as well as the administration structure. So the mixed delivery is really taking voluntary pre-K and school readiness plus and the Pathway 2 dollars and supporting a unified public pre-K model for targeted four-year-olds. Also to note around scholarships is we have a couple of policy proposals. One is to add children of incarcerated parents to the priority list, and also reduce the number of months that families have to identify a program in order to ensure that we're getting scholarships to those families as soon as they need them and they use them as soon as possible. Some smaller budget proposals around early childhood is an increase in the early childhood health and developmental screening aid at 2.1 per biennium. This is because currently school districts are reimbursed for the screenings that they do, and there's not enough money in this current allocation to cover all those costs. Districts are, on average, over the last several years, paying over $1 million in their own funds to cover the cost of screening. There is an early childhood technical funding correction for English learners and breakfast funding for early childhood special education students to ensure that they receive the breakfast funding that all early childhood children receive. There's also another technical funding correction on the average daily membership change for kindergarten students with a disability. And then there's a proposal that would allow our state Head Start agencies to have more flexibility in how they spend their state funds. Currently, our statute is aligned to federal statute, and federal statute doesn't allow Head Start agencies to use money for administration facility improvements. So we really have been hearing from our Head Start partners that they really need flexibility, so we hope to allow that with our state portion of the Head Start funds. And then one more tribal Head Start set aside is to put in a percent set aside of our state Head Start funds to allow tribal Head Start agencies to have a consistent amount of money from year to year so they can do their planning and hiring around that.
Thank you, Bobby Burnham. I know a lot of what we covered in early childhood is in Chair Pinto's committee, but I wanted us to see that we had that connection too. So some of it's in ours, some of it's in Pinto's. Next up.
Okay, I don't have any. Madam Chair, I missed a slide. Well, I have more slides.
Go for it.
I wanted to also cover the exciting proposal from the governor's office around our new Department of Children's, Youth, and Families. And we're very excited about the opportunity to collaborate with our cross-agency partners and really work to create a cabinet-level agency that really prioritizes and serves the needs of children as well as our youth and families. So the why behind this proposal is that we know that children and families need an integrated approach to accessing and navigating services with a whole child, whole family focus. We propose to create a Department of Children, Youth, and Families that reimagines our state government structure to elevate child, youth, and family priorities and funding needs by providing focused leadership at the executive branch level. The core programs proposed at this time to move to the new agency are the child care and early learning programs from MDE and the child support, child safety and permanency, and other family-focused community programs from DHS, as well as the economic support and food assistance programs from DHS. And there will be some youth opportunity programs moving to support older youth investments in this new agency. We are proposing this session for funding to have a transition office and attain the authority and resources needed to support the creation, alignment, and launch of the two-year transition process, moving core child, youth, and family support programs to the new agency, which would begin in July of 2024. The proposed department would consist of an estimated 650 staff currently supporting core services at existing agencies to move to the new Department of Children, Youth, and Families, and an estimated core budget of excess of $3 billion would move as well. So just a couple more academic excellence slides. Access to student and family opportunities. We have been implementing a full-service community school model for years in the state to great success, and this model has been very effective. It really provides a set of wraparound services that are highly needed in our communities and in our schools. So investing in these models really demonstrates improved outcomes in academic success, better attendance, lower discipline, an increased likelihood of high school graduation. Another access to student family opportunity proposal is focused on our regional basic library system. There's a demand right now for a wide range of library services for before, after, and during the summer school, and especially during the pandemic. So this proposal would decrease the equalization component with an accompanying increase in the base, which would increase funding and consistency for these regional libraries year after year. Oh, there is one proposal in that is reinstating the after-school community learning grant program, which existed, I believe, back in 2009. But this is a grant program that would provide high-quality programs to benefit and support the social, emotional, cultural, and academic development and provide safe and supportive environments for children and youth. So it's really promoting programming that supports SEL learning, cultural and academic development, while providing more options for safe and supportive spaces for children and youth while not in school during those school hours. So these would be grants to community or nonprofit organizations, culturally specific organizations, American Indian organizations, tribal nations, political subdivisions such as a city, public libraries, or school-based programs that serve youth after school, during the summer, or during non-school hours to support school-community partnerships and implement culturally affirming and enriching high-quality after-school summer learning programs.
Thank you, Bobby Burnham. Next up, we have Darren Cordy, Assistant Commissioner. Please state your name for the record and proceed.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members. My name is Darren Cordy. I'm an Assistant Commissioner for the Office of Student Support Services at the Minnesota Department of Education. I'm here to talk to you about a number of different student support proposals that we have. First, under the heading of mental health, well-being, and school safety, we have our school support personnel proposal. For those of you who have been around prior to this session, this is something we've been trying to move forward for a few years, providing additional funding for schools to hire the support staff that they need to support their students in schools in their mental, emotional, behavioral, and physical health supports that they deserve. As we know, many of our school support personnel have lower personnel-to-student ratios, especially counselors, than we would like to see in this state. So this proposal provides over $50 million each biennium to create a three-pronged approach, which provides aid to hire counselors, social workers, school nurses, school psychologists, and chemical dependency counselors. It also provides cost for services for each year and would fund 326 positions statewide. Second, we know that just providing these positions isn't enough. We have to build a workforce for these professionals as we're seeing a shortage in all of these fields. So it also creates a mental health lead at the department to support the needs of students and funding a workforce development initiative to increase the number of student support personnel each year. The next proposal is around building and cybersecurity. We know that students and staff deserve to know that they are teaching and learning in a safe environment. So we're committing to $50 million for a grant program to make safety upgrades like violence prevention and facility security, as well as covering the cost of cyber insurance in cases of malware attacks. At least half of the grants will be required to go to districts and charter schools and other educational entities in greater Minnesota. There are a couple of items I just want to flag for you quickly that aren't in the governor's education budget but are in the human services budget and do impact schools. The first of which is the school-linked behavioral health grants, which is a long-standing program that has existed at DHS, which provides funding for school districts and charter schools to contract with licensed community behavioral health professionals to provide services to behavioral health services to students in schools. A new addition this year would be expanding the use to also provide mental health treatment needs for educators and other school staff who have experienced trauma or behavioral health issues as a result of their experiences in school. So this investment would serve approximately 8,100 new students at approximately 1,100 school sites across Minnesota. Staff will also partner with specialized instructional support personnel to work on efforts for teachers as well as students. The other piece is the intermediate school-linked behavioral health grants. This is a revival of a grant program which I believe originally passed in 2016. It provides funding to our intermediate school districts, which provide highly specialized educational programs to students and families, particularly around special education, area learning centers, career and tech programs, and online learning. So this would provide additional funding for them for innovative grants to develop behavioral health programs that benefit their students and staff. With the next slide. The next slide is about changes to the American Indian Education Aid Program. We have a number of Indian education proposals, and we'll have also several in our policy bill that you'll see that are targeted at improving the outcomes and opportunities for American Indian students, which are some of our most underserved students in the state, and as a result, underperforming in terms of student achievement in the state. So this proposal proposes to increase the American Indian Education Aid Program by $13.5 million in the first biennium and $15 million in the second biennium. The program and increased funding is critical and for the outcomes and the unique cultural and academic needs of our American Indian students. The proposal will increase the base funding from $20,000 to $40,000 and increase the amount per pupil to $500. It also extends to joint powers districts and clarifies that the aid can only be used for non-Native students after the needs of American Indian students have been met. Next, we have the Native Language Revitalization Grants. This is a new proposal in the governor's budget this year. Children who learn their indigenous language, research shows, are able to maintain critical ties to their culture, affirm their identity, and preserve important connections with older generations. That language is a vital asset for Native people and their communities. The Language Conservancy estimates that 41% of the 7,000 languages currently spoken are endangered, and that without intervention, 90% will be extinct within 100 years. So this proposal would invest $15 million per biennium for grants to offer courses in Dakota or Anishinaabe, and funds can cover teacher pay, program supplies, and curricular resources. There would also be a requirement for Tier 3 and Tier 4 teachers seeking relicensure to complete 8 hours of American Indian history and culture training. We think it's important that every Minnesota, whether indigenous or not, should be encouraged to learn about the distinct and unique heritage of American Indians in a culturally responsive manner. The final item in this package is providing a small amount of funding for the students attending Bureau of Indian Education or tribal contract schools to take supplemental online learning courses. As we've discussed in the past, these are schools that operate under the auspices of the federal government. However, these are Minnesota students and Minnesota schools, and so we believe that providing this funding will reduce an inequitable limitation that these students have to online course taking. Go to the next slide. This slide has a number of changes specific to students with disabilities. For those of you familiar, each school site that serves students with disabilities is given a federal designation or a setting based on the amount of time that students in that setting spend with their non-disabled peers. Of course, the goal of our agency and the goal of school districts is to get students in the most or the least restrictive environment where they're spending their most time with their non-disabled peers and having access to the same curriculum and coursework that they have. However, we do know that some students with very severe needs require separate settings, and that those settings can generate extreme costs for those districts to serve those students in need, as they're required to do under state and federal law. So this would provide funding to those separate sites in the amount of $9.4 million in the first biennium and $10.9 million in the second biennium to those sites that are serving setting four or higher. Some larger districts have those sites, but primarily these sites are found in your intermediate districts, your special education cooperatives, and your education districts. The second proposal is around extending funding for special education services until students reach age 22. So currently in Minnesota, you are entitled to a free and appropriate education if you're a student with a disability until the year in which you turn age 21. So if you're born on June 1st instead of July 1st, you essentially lose about a year of education compared to what the other might get. So this proposes, well, first of all, I'd also point out that we are under a lawsuit alleging that this current system is in violation of the Federal Education or Individuals with Disabilities Education Act. So this proposal would, we believe, bring us in line with federal requirements and would allow us to provide funding for students with disabilities up until the day in which they turn age 22. And then lastly, the specific learning disability criteria change. This is something that you may have seen in our budget last year, but it does, under our current rules and statutes, there's two ways to identify a student with a specific learning disability. One is called the severe discrepancy model. The other is called multi-tiered systems of support, or previously were known as response to intervention. Critics of the severe discrepancy model say it's kind of a wait-to-fail approach where you have to wait until a student's, until their achievement level is falling behind where they should be based upon their IQ before a teacher or a professional can intervene. So this proposal proposes to remove the use of the severe discrepancy model, but also understanding that schools are going to need resources and training in order to get their staff up to speed and have a statewide MTSS model. So this also provides funding for that at $1.14 million per biennium. So with that, I will hand it over to Assistant Commissioner Stephanie Graff.
Thank you, Darren Cordy. Go ahead, Stephanie Graff, please state your name for the record and proceed.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Stephanie Graff. I'm an Assistant Commissioner at the Minnesota Department of Education.
And I'll spend a few minutes here talking through some additional components around creating equitable teaching and learning environments. And then I'll talk a little bit about high school programming and really reimagining the high school experience. And then lastly, I'll touch on educator workforce issues as well. And so the first item is around a grant program related to alternatives to exclusionary discipline strategies and really thinking about how we ground our work in relationship building models, how we think about discipline as an opportunity for growth and not punishment, and really you know, addressing the disparities and the persistent disparities, particularly for our Black and our American Indian children being suspended at much higher rates than their peers. And so this proposal really is grounded in the belief that every student has the right to learn in a safe, supportive, and nurturing environment. It's over $5.2 million in FY24, and then over 5.5 or so in FY25, 26, and 27. I mentioned this includes a grant program to districts and charter schools for implementing alternatives to exclusionary discipline practices and reducing disparities. The grant program can include things like training for educators, on trauma-informed anti-bias practices, on de-escalation, right, and around, as I mentioned, some of these relationship-building models. It can include SEL interventions, things like adult mentorship for children, connection with families, these things that we really know are rooted in an evidence base to address discipline disparities and make sure that our students are able to learn in an environment where they are safe and supported. The next one is a student voice model and really understanding the importance of holding space and valuing youth voice in everything that we do, making sure that students know their contributions, their ideas, their opinions really matter. And so this is a new grant program for our school communities, as well as some work at the state level to really leverage the Minnesota Student Survey and think about how we can build robust data reporting, how we can provide training and assistance and support on how to use the really rich data set that is the Minnesota Student Survey. Right now, the resources at the Minnesota Department of Education are very minimal just to kind of the nuts and bolts of administering the survey. And so we want to be able to really leverage that rich data to provide that support. And then really thinking about resources for school communities to implement youth voice models within their local school communities as well. $8 million one time in FY24 available to spend through FY27 for that program. Excuse me. The next one is really focused on student attendance policies and practices, and research is clear on the connection between students consistently attending school and their both academic and social-emotional success for the future. And so this is a budget proposal really thinking about building some state capacity to support local school communities and broader communities at large to respond to really the root causes of chronic absenteeism, really thinking about the importance of partnerships and connection with families and how we can address chronic absenteeism, particularly for those students that, again, we have disparities in who is consistently attending school. And so MDE, just to be really transparent, receives a lot of questions around attendance, chronic absenteeism, and how we can address this together. And so right now we have pieces at the agency where this connects, but really we are seeing a real need for state capacity to really support community-driven efforts to address chronic absenteeism. So it's $460,000 per biennium for capacity at MDE for this position. The next one is around foster student transportation and really ensuring that students placed in foster care are able to remain enrolled in their school of origin, knowing how that consistent enrollment in school is so critical to the success of our foster care students. Before the Every Student Succeeds Act, the federal Every Student Succeeds Act law passed, this was funded because foster care students were included in the definition of students that were homeless or highly mobile. That is no longer the case at a federal level, and so therefore districts are not receiving these resources to provide that transportation for foster care students to provide that educational stability to remain enrolled in the school of origin. And so this is $540,000 in the first biennium and then up to $1.2 million in the second biennium. Next slide. Thanks. Yeah. I should be clearer. Thank you. All right. The next, so kind of moving a little bit into, as I mentioned, reimagining the secondary school experience. And so this first one is really looking at an opportunity for a pilot program around post-secondary enrollment options, or PSEO, just knowing how critical it is to open up doors for our students, increase access, and remove barriers to post-secondary enrollment options and dual credit options sort of at large. This is based on, you know, really kind of years of work with the P20 Education Partnership and really thinking about how we can incentivize school districts and post-secondaries to work very well with one another and promoting and ensuring access. And so this is a pilot program for us to provide grants for $47.9 million in grants to districts and charters, for those districts and charters to receive additional ADM for students that take post-secondary enrollment options. So typically districts will not receive the ADM for the students that are enrolled in PSEO. So this would sort of hold them harmless for those students. And then also thinking about how our school communities, our districts can provide planning, implementation, evaluation, and reporting to inform where we go with post-secondary enrollment options for the future, and how we really make sure that our students are fully supported having those opportunities to them with their counselors in high school, their educators in high school, and their school principals, alongside working hand in hand with our post-secondary institutions. And so again, a pilot program, $2.1 million of this is administrative and programmatic capacity really at the state for us to be able to collect meaningful data to really evaluate the impact of fully funding post-secondary enrollment options to inform future funding structures around dual credit opportunities for students. The next one is around career and technical education access, and really thinking about CTE programs as a really critical aspect of our workforce development efforts across the state, and expansion of CTE programs really being important as we think about matching our skill and talent with the workforce needs today and in the future, and particularly some of the economic pillars that we see within specific regions of the state. And so this is a renewed commitment, an expanded commitment to CTE, $30 million in one-time grants in FY24, available to spend over the course of the 4 years, and so it's a one-time program. $26.3 million of this, as I mentioned, directly to districts, charter schools, or regional service cooperatives or regional entities able to expand or establish career and technical education opportunities for our students. And then $2.5 million for efforts around CTE teacher mentorship and retention. And you're going to hear me talk a little bit in a moment about broader teacher mentorship and induction programs and the importance of these programs on retaining our teachers. But we particularly need a laser-like focus on retention of career and technical education teachers, licensure support for Tier 1 and Tier 2 teachers in technical education, as well as work-based learning opportunities for the state, and thinking about additional adoption and expansion of apprenticeships and internships and other experiential work-based learning opportunities for our students. Next slide. This next one is around competency-based education, and we know that in the 21st century, students need more innovative and personalized learning opportunities, and so this is really thinking about how we allow students to master content in a flexible way, flexibility in time, pace, and place. That is incredibly student-centered, and really thinking also about outside of the school building opportunities for students and community partnerships. There's growing interest among our school communities in moving towards a competency-based model and really shifting away from seat time, the traditional course-based model or the Carnegie unit model that we're so familiar with, and sort of our traditional schooling, and thinking about how we create school in a competency-based way that starts with the student and gives them that flexibility, again, to master standards, master content, receive credit in a pace and a place and a time that is flexible for them and will best meet their needs. And so this is a grant program. It's a one-time program over the course of 4 years, providing funding to districts and charter schools to expand these opportunities, and then also thinking about how we do kind of a landscape study at the state and have community-driven conversations to really identify needs and think about data collection and think about how we expand our learnings as we potentially think about scaling competency-based models with other school communities. Expanding rigorous coursework opportunities is one that you've heard us talk about regularly, a core part as all of this is in the Due North Education Plan, really thinking about making sure our students of color and Indigenous students and students in greater Minnesota have the same access to courses like AP, IB, PSEO, concurrent enrollment, and as I mentioned, CTE. And so this is a grant program, really a continuation of resources we've been able to provide be able to ensure that we are actively recruiting, breaking down barriers, providing transportation, academic advising, all of the supports that our students need in order to engage in rigorous coursework. And again, as I mentioned, both a geographic and a demographic representation as we think about this grant program. Next slide. The next one is $300,000 just in the first biennium to really focus on program alignment for youth apprenticeship programs and making sure that students are able to use their youth apprenticeship hours that they're receiving in K-12 in a registered apprenticeship program. And so this is thinking similarly to like a dual credit opportunity for students where they receive high school credit and they receive post-secondary credit. We want to make sure that students can transfer hours to registered apprenticeship programs. And so there needs to be an explicit alignment between the competencies that those students are meeting within their apprentice program in K-12 with the Department of Labor and Industry registered apprenticeship competencies to make sure that students can count those hours for registered apprenticeships. And so this includes a work group really at the state with post-secondary partners, industry partners to ensure that that alignment exists and that students can get the credit that they deserve in registered apprenticeships. Manufacturing is one key area where there's a lot of interest and a bit of a disconnect, so students aren't getting those hours counted in a meaningful way. Computer science education. We know that computer science opportunities in K-12 are critical to preparing for the workforce of the future, and we also know computing jobs are growing rapidly across the state. And so this includes resources to build a task force really at the state to develop a state computer science education plan. The governor last summer signed a compact with other governors across the country, really expressing his interest and state need around robust computer science education, how we integrate computer science into K-12, how we think about high school course expansion, professional development and training for teachers, licensure barriers and challenges right now, as well as data collection. And so this includes building of that state plan and then also some resources for school districts to pilot components of that state plan sort of in the short term as well. A couple quick ones. So first, high school equivalency tests, and we know that the cost of the GED or the HiSET test can be a financial barrier for earning a high school equivalency diploma. Excuse me. A battery of tests costs as much as $136. Free tests tests that were funded by the state ended in 2020, and we have seen a drop in the number of tests that have been taken. And so this is a one-time $490,000 spent over 4 years to pay for high school equivalency tests for our adult basic education students across the state. And then lastly, a couple adult basic education adjustments that are no cost. The first one, increasing the cap from $22 to $30 per contact hour. This does not, as I mentioned, generate more state aid, but does have an impact for greater Minnesota ABE grantees them being especially impacted by this cap. And then the next one is a very technical fix, making sure that our growth factor for ABE does not decline from year to year. It's actually a practice that we've been using at MDE, but wanting a technical fix in statute to make sure that this is clarified. All right, and then getting a little bit into educator workforce efforts. And so the first one is around grow your own opportunities. And we know there is high demand out in the field for grow your own. The last application, I don't have the numbers in front of me, but the last application that MDE ran for grow your own programs had far more applicants than we were able to fund. And so we know the demand is there as we think about students having equitable experiences and access to diverse and effective educators. And so this includes $35 million per biennium. There are three prongs to this grow your own approach or model. The first one is a continuation and expansion of diversifying the educator workforce, so growing local talent within school communities to make sure we're creating pathways for students or for adults from diverse backgrounds into the teaching profession. The second one is thinking about access for Tier 1 and Tier 2 special education teachers, knowing the importance of putting Tier 1 and Tier 2 teachers on a path to Tier 3. And then the third prong is really looking at early childhood licensure and shortage areas as well. And so those three areas being really key to this grow your own effort. In the past, it's been focused on diversity. We want to scale that and expand that. And we also know special education and early childhood are two areas where we have critical shortages across the state. Paid student teaching opportunities. We're really excited about this new proposal as we think about removing the financial barrier of that 12-week student teaching period for our aspiring educators. This is very hard for some people to step away from jobs and income and be able to engage in student teaching. And so we know many other sectors provide on-the-job paid training. And so we want to be able to do that as a way to open doors for aspiring educators into the classroom as well. And so this is $29.3 million in each biennium to pay pre-service teachers a stipend during that 12-week student teaching period. We also know how important it is to get our young people excited about professions and education. And so we want to invest in educator career pathways. This is really introducing the educators of tomorrow to the path of teaching, right, while they are in secondary school. And again, knowing this is one solution to alleviating the teacher workforce shortage. And so this is $7 million one time over the course of 4 years, really making sure that we're providing opportunities for experience and exposure for our young people in the field of education. And so this is a grant to school districts and charter schools in order to do that. This could look like job shadowing opportunities for teachers. This could look like local clubs or sort of committees for students to engage in what it looks like to enter professions in education. It can be, and most commonly is, concurrent enrollment for students to engage in teaching 101 or education exploration, right, type of college courses as well. So I'm really excited about that, expanding educator career pathways. The next one is addressing teacher shortage in early childhood education. This was also a prong of Grow Your Own. The difference here, it's $980,000 in the first biennium, 1.4 in the second, and these are grants to institutes of higher education, specifically around you know, providing tuition and supports for our aspiring early learning educators. Particularly, we see these shortages in ECFE and ECSE, and so a couple areas here that we want to make sure that we're providing providing resources for. Next slide. I mentioned earlier with CTE around teacher mentorship and induction programs. We know that high quality mentorship and induction programs, particularly for teachers that are in the first 1 to 3 years of being in the profession, really help with keeping teachers in the field of teaching and growing and thriving for the long haul. And so we really must provide these kinds of supports for our new educators, particularly as we think about the importance of retaining our educators of color and our Indigenous educators across the state. This would be expanding short-term funding that we've been able to leverage with some of our federal COVID stimulus dollars under the American Rescue Plan Act, and thinking about grant programs, particularly through regional partners, could be institutes of higher education, it could be regional service cooperatives, to provide mentoring supports to, you know, sort of on a regional basis to educators, also thinking about grants for teacher of record mentorship to tier one special education teachers. And then also, you know, thinking about the importance of contracts and partnerships with national experts as we think about a high quality induction and mentorship program across the state. Teacher licensing and exam fees. Excited about this one, and also a continuation of what we've been able to do short term with some federal COVID stimulus dollars. This proposal removes these fees as barriers to entering the profession, just period. And so you can see the dollar amounts. It's $1.4 million one time in the first biennium available to spend over the course of 4 years. And then the very last one before I hand it over to our chief financial officer is thinking about our Minnesota Indian Teacher training program. And we know just how important it is to increase the number of American Indian teachers as a key part of diversifying our workforce to ensure students see themselves represented in their teachers. And so this is an expansion of an existing program. It also allows for there to be a special revenue count set up so that these resources can be used over the course of 5 years. And this is based on input from the Institutes of Higher Education that have been able to provide these supports to aspiring American Indian educators. And so really excited about being able to continue to grow and make sure that we have American Indian educators across the state. And with that, I think I'll hand it over to our Chief Financial Officer.
Thank you, Stephanie Graff. I'm Denise Anderson, our Chief Financial Officer. Please state your name for the record and proceed.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. For the record, my name is Denise Anderson, and I'm the Chief Financial Officer at the Department of Education. I'm going to cover a couple of areas. The first one is around enhancing our much-needed IT and data collection activities. The governor's budget includes ongoing funding for the EDFI data collection system and data reporting. This is a system that's been developed or and piloted over the last number of years, putting together or using temporary funding to get the project off the ground and moving. And so the governor's budget includes ongoing funding to support and enhance those activities. It also includes funding for Tableau, which is a tool that can be used for building interactive data dashboards. The primary use of these funds will be for our IT services, and also the funding will be used to provide program support and technical assistance to districts as they move forward in implementing EDFI. The second proposal is information technology resources. Over the past 10 years or so, the budget for MDE's ongoing IT maintenance services has remained relatively flat. And as we know, there's been cost pressures over the years. And so this proposal is to provide some additional funding so that MDE or so that our IT folks can be properly resourced in order for us to modernize some of our data or all of our systems, not just the data systems. So MDE has approximately 136 applications, and so this proposal then would allow us to do some enhanced work in those areas. The funding for this proposal is strictly for IT services. There are a number of other smaller proposals in the governor's budget around IT and data collection. I just want to touch briefly on one of them, the data governance manager. Data informs many things that the Department of Education does, our policies, our programs, and our decisions. And so one of the best practices is to treat that data as if it were an asset, and that data management is critical then in enabling us to get more value from that data. So the governor's budget includes ongoing funding for a position to do the data governance activities in the department. And then a couple of smaller change items proposals. There's $135,000 in the first year. And then it drops off in later years to support the digital equity for students enrolled in Minnesota public schools. This is to develop a reporting system and then collect the data and use the data for reporting students' access to digital devices and internet connectivity. Again, the majority of that is for the IT costs to set up and develop that reporting system. And then there's some smaller ones around some other reporting reporting and data collections that need to happen, and so we need some system updates to make those happen. I won't read the slide. Then moving into the additional agency needs, one of the proposals in the governor's budget is to provide ongoing funding for our Equity, Diversity, and Inclusion Center. It includes $30 million in one-time grants for schools, districts, and charter schools to implement culturally relevant practices. These grant funds would be available for 4 years, and then it also provides $2 million a year for the department to do the work. Some of these positions are funded currently with funding that goes away. Two other significant proposals in the governor's change item related to strengthening the department's fraud, waste, and abuse activities. The first one is to develop and implement an Office of Inspector General within the department. Funds would be used to hire inspector generals that then could not only provide oversight and monitoring of our grants, but also, if needed, perform some investigatory activities as well. Along the same lines, we also are looking at some additional school audit, internal audit, and internal control resources. Again, to strengthen our approach to combating fraud, waste, and abuse. Yeah, and then there's some other agency needs at the end here, and I just want to highlight that we do have a need for ongoing legal costs. As Darren mentioned, we have some litigation going on. We have received the last two bienniums some one-time funding. And so the governor's proposal is to continue that one-time funding. So with that, I will pause. Thank you.
Thank you, Denise Anderson. I know that's a lot of information, members, that we went through. You have the slides. We have the budget that you can either view online or get copies of. A lot of these provisions we'll be discussing in committee as individual bills as well. But this is our opportunity to ask questions about a lot of the provisions in here that we may be considering. Representative Hill.
Hi, my question goes back to Director Erickson on voter-approved levies and the local district board's ability to renew those one time. Can you just talk a little bit about the specifics around that? If that's current operating levies that are already in place, is that tied only to future levies that are passed by voters? If you could just fill in some more detail, that'd be wonderful. Thank you.
Go ahead and please state your name for the record again and proceed.
Again, Kathy Erickson, Director of School Finance, Department of Education, Chair Joachim and member. The question is related to voter-approved operating referendums. Right now, this would be for active referendums that have already passed. Most or all, except this past year, I think we saw over 95% of referendums that are renewals pass. And so this would allow districts to not have to go through the process of a re-election when we see a high number of approvals through those renewal referendums. Does that answer your question?
Representative Hamm.
Thank you, Chair Joachim. Yes, Director Erickson, thank you. That answers the question. I do have one more, but let others go.
Go ahead, just do a quick follow-up.
The other question is for Assistant Commissioner Graff, and I wanted to talk about the program on slide 26. It's about post-secondary options and some of the grant options for schools, districts, and charter schools that are engaging in some of these programs. I'm wondering if the college and the schools programs that we see operating in many districts is also a part of that and eligible for those grants.
Go ahead, state your name for the record.
Madam Chair, yes, Stephanie Graff, Assistant Commissioner. Representative, thank you for the question. So as a part of the post-secondary enrollment options funding pilot, that is specific to PSEO. We know that college in the schools is another opportunity for students in high school to engage in dual credit, right, and to receive rigorous coursework, right, to put them on a path to success in post-secondary. And so that is a program that will continue. It also is a part of the rigorous coursework grant that we have. So that is on the menu of options as we think about dual credit opportunities for students. So we have PSEO, we have college and schools, right, we have AP and we have IB opportunities to receive college credit. And so the college and the schools piece, I know, is one that's been incredibly valuable. But that is a part of the rigorous coursework grant. It is not a part of the PSEO pilot.
Wonderful. Thank you, Assistant Commissioner Graff and Director Erickson.
Thank you, Representative Hill. Representative Sensenmura.
Thank you, Chair. And thank you so much for this presentation. And I'll just say, as a former college and the schools student in high school, I think it's a really great program, which allows students to gain college credit without having to leave their building, which I think takes a lot of barriers away for students. My question is around the new department, the Department of Children, Youth, and Families. I'm wondering if someone can speak to just a little bit more about kind of the process that has gone into designing this new department. I know that Minnesota used to have a similar department and then moved away from it, and now we're moving back in that direction. Why that change? What is hoping to be accomplished? I think if you can just speak to a little bit of concerns maybe about adding an extra layer of bureaucracy to potentially doing this work. And are there other states that have a similar department that you're modeling this after? Thank you.
Assistant Commissioner Burnham.
Madam Chair, that's a great question. Thank you for that question. What I can share with you today is it's been an ongoing conversation for several years. So there has been proposals that have surfaced the last couple legislative sessions. And given the Great Start Task Force that was charged last session to do the research and produce a report, it is a recommendation from that report. And the task force, in the process of producing that report, did extensive outreach and engagement of different types of programs, schools, early childhood coordinators. So we will get you a link to that task force report to provide that information. But it's the governor's office, given the extent of outreach and the conversations over the last several years around this, and just listening to families around their need to have a better coordinated system in order to navigate the services that will meet the needs of their family and community. So that's the impetus behind the new agency proposal. And we know that we can do better by coordinating across the agency and across the enterprise. So the governor and lieutenant governor just see this as an opportunity to make that happen for families. We're being very intentional around the transition process, and it's a two-year transition process, so we are taking the next year to continue these conversations and really map out the different questions that all different stakeholders will have around this proposal. We are working internally and externally, internally with our staff and in, you know, as you can imagine, that it is providing a little bit of angst with staff, just not knowing. But we will engage them in conversation. We will continue to engage stakeholders in conversation. And so the ultimate goal is just to ease the burden on families to access services and have them more coordinated.
Representative Sensenmura, follow up. With that, Representative Pryor.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I will follow up. That was one of my as you can imagine, was something I was extremely interested in. And so it's DCYF is our new acronym for the new agency. So children, youth, and families. So just wonderful to hear the progress on that. And also when you mentioned 2 years as being the rollout of it, knowing how important that is to do it in a thoughtful way, because there's embedded programs and DHS and MDE and the Department of Health that I know that we'll be able to pull together so that it's directed at getting services to the kids and to the families that need it instead of to the bureaucracy that's delivering them. So, you know, I'm really happy about the direction that we've been able to do as a state, and I know that there's other models that are doing this successfully. They did, some of them did it really fast, but I think we're doing it the right way. One of the things that that I know that you'll be following up on, and it is important to this, and I thought it's also good to highlight as a committee now, is the IT part of it and the databases, the information that we collect, and that we have really different systems in the state. And so that's been always this barrier for families, is having to deal with this system and this set of forms, and they can't talk to the other group of people that are giving them services because it's not compatible and there's not that permission to cross the lines. And then, you know, I know that it's two different places I think that I saw this kinds of transition costs. One is in the, you know, in our closing presentation about the IT costs, and then also in the amount of money that we need to budget to create this new agency. And could you speak a little bit more about that, you know, that how that looks and how you've put it in different parts of the budget, and I assume that we also are talking about different money that needs to be spent.
Commissioner Burnham, brief answer, just because we have 10 minutes and a few more people on the sheet to ask questions, but also maybe highlight as well folks that will be transitioning into the new department versus hiring new people, because it sounds like it's more of moving folks around and consolidating. So, Commissioner.
Madam Chair, thank you. Representative Pryor, that's a great question. We were at Chair Pinto's committee this morning at 8:30, and the IT infrastructure was clearly apparent as a theme across all of MDE's presentations and all of DHS's. So it will be an undertaking to, as you know, that has been a barrier over the years, the IT infrastructure. So I don't have exact budget numbers, but we can, as we develop those, we're just now getting into the process where we're working within each agency to identify what those needs, technical needs, administrative needs around the IT infrastructure, as well as the support services structure and the programming. So that will be a big component of the transition to this new agency. And as far as staffing, we do not, you know, see staff will just transition from their current work into the new agency. One of those administrative tasks we are working out is just the structure of the new agency around classifications and whatnot, because, you know, our classifications at MDE may be different than DHS. So there's a lot of kind of background work to do to sort through all the different pieces of the transition process to this new agency. But the work will remain the same in the staff, and we've been very clear to the staff that your work, you will continue to do the great work you're doing to serve children and families in the state. You just will be under a new roof.
Thank you. Representative Greenman.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I really appreciate this. I actually, I don't know if this was Director Erickson, but I just wanted to both highlight and also I have a question about the unemployment insurance aid and highlight and really a moment of gratitude for the acknowledgement that the folks in the building, the paraprofessionals, the food service workers, the drivers, and the work that they do to educate our kids, to support our kids, and how critical I think even now, I know if your district is like my district, you're hearing a lot about the staffing shortages, about the need for paras. I hear a lot about that from the parents and teachers, about the bus driver shortage and the food service shortage. And so really appreciate that, I think, especially right now. Folks have been working on this for about 20 years, but eliminating the exclusion of those hourly workers from the economic security of unemployment insurance. So, one, thank you. I know we're going to hear this bill likely in this committee, and I know also in workforce because it's a deed is really dealing with the eligibility. My question is, can you speak a little bit more to the support you're proposing to actually support that transition and help schools implement this policy?
Assistant Commissioner Burnham or Director Erickson, whoever would like to answer.
Chair and member, thank you for that great question. The unemployment insurance aid that's being proposed would be looking at the net unemployment costs that increase due to the potential increase of eligible employees for unemployment versus the base year of fiscal year 24, which will be the year just prior. And then the difference between those two would be what would become eligible for reimbursement. Currently, the proposal is a capped appropriation, so it has a potential subject for proration. But right now, the estimates make us believe that everything would get fully funded in the difference. Does that help?
No, that was great.
Representative Freeman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. That was great. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative.
Madam Chair.
Yes.
I'll address her new agency question quickly. Okay. So the transition process, like I mentioned, is a two-year process. And year one of that process, we will, part of the proposal is to put a transition team in place. And so they will coordinate across all the agencies around all the different administrative processes and technical pieces that we need to put together.
Madam Chair.
Yes, Representative Greenman, we started late, so we can't ask for extra time.
I think that the confusion, I was talking about the transition as it relates to unemployment insurance and ensuring that our hourly workers. So I just wanted to make sure to clear up. I think we're talking about two different transitions, and it's just expanding the eligibility. Thank you.
Representative Perez Vega.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I have a question in how much, this is relating to English learner learning, how much funding per pupil is there now for ELL students in Minnesota?
Director Erickson?
Right now we have individual with concentration revenues are individual by district, but the average EL program amount is I apologize. I'm blanking out right at this moment. Can I follow up with you individually?
Yes, Mr. Strom.
Thank you, Director Erickson. Mr. Strom, do you have an answer?
Madam Chair, the cost per year of that component is about $60 million, I believe. Ms. Erickson's printouts and others will show that. And the formula, there's the $704 per EL student plus the $250 of concentration aid, which Director Erickson just mentioned.
Representative Perez Vega.
Thank you, and Madam Chair, thank you, Madam Chair. And also, how does the funding and the Gov's proposal right now close that gap?
Director?
Thank you. We would be increasing those capped amounts to increase the $704 to $1,000 per child.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Representative Purcell, last question, and then we can always, all the commissioners here will be more than happy to follow up with you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This is perhaps a question for Assistant Commissioner Graff. I was wondering if you could talk a little bit more about the secondary school experiences, the career and technical education. I believe the FSA is in there, or FFA, and if you can just list out a couple of those other programs, that would be appreciated. Thank you.
Yes, Assistant Commissioner Graff, and then we also will be doing a combined hearing with higher ed. So, Assistant Commissioner Graff.
Great, Madam Chair, Representative, thank you for the question. Yeah, so this, as we think about career and technical education access and the importance of this is really an expansion, right, to make sure that our school communities are able to either expand local, opportunities for students around career and technical education within their districts, or if districts want to adopt new career and technical education areas, right? So, for example, if there is a school community that does not yet have FFA, right, these would be resources for them to be able to engage in partnerships with local industry partners in agriculture, right, to convene advisory councils with community and bring students to the table to develop opportunities to build an FFA program, right? We could do the same in other career and technical education, maybe health sciences, right? If we want to expand around health sciences, maybe there's an interest in information technology, career and technical education, or manufacturing. And so there are different career clusters within CTE, and so this gives school communities an opportunity to take a look at the economic pillars within their regions, what the workforce is telling them are the needs of skills and talents of students, and then be able to develop that at a local level to make sure that those opportunities are available to students.
Thank you, Commissioner Graff. Yeah. And we'll have to move on now, so thank you, members, for the discussion. We can take all these other questions offline. Next week, we'll be hearing bills to address the special ed cross-subsidy, the ELL cross-subsidy, investing in full-service community schools, as well as school support staff. So watch for the posting, and we're adjourned.